Okay, I think we're going to get started. My name is Tamara Spitz. We are in the middle of our series on biblical midrash. And today I actually wanted to compare two slash four different characters, people in Tanakh. I think that they all have a very interesting relationship. Some of the things we're going to be talking about is based on the Pshat, and some of the things that we're going to be talking about is going to be based on Midrash. I think the overarching question is going to be, what were Chazal's kind of thoughts comparing these characters. So I'm going to share the screen with you. Those of you who are interested, I put the source sheet in the chat box as well. I call the sheet were in-laws and outcasts. We're going to compare Ruth and Moshe. Both Ruth and Moshe have a very, I think, a very unique relationship with their in-law. Being a mother-in-law myself, having a mother-in-law myself, I think that those relationships could be very complicated. I want to understand, first of all, the relationship between these characters and their in-laws, but also I want to discuss with you really a comparison between Ruth and Moshe. So first of all, just let's take a step back and just talk about Moshe, first of all. Moshe, as we know, is brought up in the palace of Paro in Mitzrayim. He runs away from Egypt. His father, or his maybe stepfather, wants to kill him. He runs away and ends up in Midian. In Midian, at the well, he meets Yitro's daughters, and they bring him home. And the Torah really describes a very close relationship between Moshe and Yitro. Moshe comes to live in Yitro's house. Ultimately, he marries his daughter Tzipora. Even though, interestingly enough, in the Pshat, there isn't this like romance between Moshe and Tzipora. I personally think that it was Moshe wanting to have a close relationship with Yitro, and therefore he married his daughter, which I think is an interesting, we can kind of think about that. And then, of course, later on, famously, Moshe leaves Yitro's house. He is sent by Hashem to Egypt to save the Jewish people, as we know. And later on, right, as we know very famously in Parshat Yitro, right before Matan Torah, of course, one can discuss if it's in chronological order or not. But we do know that Yitro comes back. Or meets, I should say, meets Moshe and Am Yisrael. He brings Tzipora and Moshe's children. And again, we see the relationship that Moshe has with Yitro, so much so that Yitro sees that Moshe is burdened by the nation, by judging the nation. And Yitro comes up with an incredible way of judging the people. As my husband likes to say, he's the first consultant, right? He comes in, he sees a problem, he solves it, and Moshe implements his solution in terms of a court system. At the end, we don't really know what happens. We know that Yitro says he wants to leave. Moshe says, please stay with us, come with us to Eretz Yisrael. The pshat seems to imply that Yitro does leave, though it is not clear from the psukim if he does or he doesn't. Okay, so that is our overview of Moshe and Yitro. Let's go to Ruth and Naomi. I think also a very famous story, right? Naomi leaves Beit Lechem with her husband and two sons, ends up in Moab. And there her sons marry Moabite women. The Midrash says princesses. We'll get to that in a second. But that's not the pshat. The pshat is they are Moabite women. The two sons die. Ruth and Orpah are left. And Naomi decides that she wants to go back to Eretz Yisrael. She tells her daughters-in-law, it's been lovely, but now it's time for you to go home. And as we know, Orpah, after some hesitation, does go back. And Ruth, as we know, continues with Naomi. And I think that we see a really beautiful relationship between Ruth and Naomi, both of them taking care of each other. And as we know, Ruth converts to be with Naomi follows Naomi back to Israel. And again, I think a very loving relationship between Ruth and her mother-in-law. So when looking at these psukim, I thought it was just very interesting having this relationship between a child or a person and their in-law. I'm not sure about any other relationship, though we can leave that for the end. If you have some ideas, feel free to share. But I think it's very fascinating to compare these characters. On one hand, compare the personalities, meaning Ruth and Moshe. On the other hand, also comparing the in-laws as well. So that is the theme for our shiur today. So I wanted to start with their childhood. Okay, so again, as I mentioned in the beginning, we are going to see certain things are pshat and certain things are midrash. So we start in source number one with the midrash. Rabbi Yossi bar Huna says, Ruth was the daughter of Eglon, son of the son of Balak, the king of Moab, right? So we see here the midrash tells us that Ruth is actually a princess. Not only that, but she is the daughter of Eglon. We know Eglon from the story of Ehud ben Gera in Sefer Shoftim. And we see that she is the great son of the son, right? She is the great grandchild of Balak. The Gemara does discuss what merit did Balak have to have Ruth come out from him, and not only Ruth, but as we know, David HaMelech. The Gemara actually says that because Balak did bring sacrifices to God, he merited to have Ruth come from him. So we see that Ruth is a princess and grows up in the palace. We see a similar idea. This is pshat in source number two. When we have Moshe growing up. Where does he grow up? Right. When the child grew up, she brought him to Paro's daughter, who made him her son. Right. This is Yocheved bringing back Moshe after he is weaned, and he grows up in the palace. Right, she names him Moshe because she drew him out of the water. Kimin hamayim, right? Kimin hamayim mishitihu. And it says sometime after that, when Moshe had grown up, he went out to his kinfolk and witnessed their labors. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his kinsmen. But it's interesting to see that, first of all, in the pshat, we have a huge blank in terms of the childhood of the raising of Moshe, right? Moshe grows up in the palace between Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. he's already, either a late adolescent, early adulthood. And that whole time he grows up in the palace, right? And the Midrash actually tells us this, right? Moshe, here it's actually more, right? Breishit Rabban, source number 3. Moshe spent 40 years in the palace of Paro. So not adolescence, but 40 years, says the Midrash, 40 years in Midian, and 40 years serving Israel. And I think that this line, this idea is very specific on purpose, right? What does it mean that he would grow up 40 years in the palace of Mitzrayim, 40 years in Midian, and 40 years with Israel? And I think that the Midrash is trying to tell us that all these years, right, were very important in the formation of the leader that was Moshe, right? So we see that the Midrash tells us purposefully, right, not 10 years here and 20 years there, but the Midrash specifically says 40 years, right, that to tell us that it's equal, meaning each part of his life gave Moshe the ability to lead the people. So we see that both roots, now I think it's important to understand, right? Moshe, we say that there is no other Navi like Moshe, right? We call Moshe Rabbeinu. He is the ultimate leader of Israel. And we know that Ruth, right, is the, I would like to call her the mother of monarchy, because we know that David HaMelech comes from Ruth. So the question is, right, what was so important to the Midrash, to Chazal, to say that both Ruth and Moshe grew up in a foreign palace, right? And I think the idea here is that it gives them that, well, it's interesting that for Ruth, it's not a foreign palace. It is her palace, though she joins our nation. I think the idea here is that the upbringing in a different palace gives both of these characters an idea of how foreign states, how foreign rulers rule. And that really gives them the tools in order to become either leaders themselves like Moshe, or the progenitor for leaders as well. So I think that that this idea is very important and will lead us to more comparisons as we continue. Let's go to the second section. The next section is the idea of different names. Right? We see name changes that happen throughout these people's lives. Interestingly, here it's for the parents, right? The in-laws themselves, right? It says in source number 4, it says in Megillat Rut, when Naomi comes back to Beit Lechem, she says, do not call me Naomi, right? Call me Mara, for Hashem has made my lot very bitter, right? Mar means bitter. So she says, don't call me Naomi, call me Mara. And she explains why, right? I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. How can you call me Naomi when the Lord has dealt harshly with me, right? When Hashem has brought misfortune upon me, right? Interestingly, here we usually see name changes in a very positive light, right? We see Hashem changing Abraham's name, Sarah's name. We see him giving an additional name to Yaakov, right? Meaning Israel. We usually do not see, we have Yehoshua as well. We usually don't see it in a negative way. Interestingly, I should say as well, generally name changes are because someone else changes the person's name, right? Meaning either God, or in the case of Yoshua, it's Moshe. But here, interestingly, we do not have someone else giving this name. Rather, it's the person themselves saying that they can no longer be known as their own name, and changes their name to something going on in their lives. I think, interestingly, Ruth, in her conversion, does not change her name. Unless, of course, her name was Ruth, only afterwards, and we don't know her Moabite name. But interestingly, she does not change her name. It's her mother-in-law that changes her own name. So I think that that's fascinating. Let's continue. Here, again, here the Midrash does say source number five, that actually Ruth did get a name change. Her name was originally Gilit, and when she married Mahlon, he called her Ruth. So maybe that could be seen as a name change already in the beginning when she gets married. Okay, the Midrash continues and tells us in source number six that Moshe also has a name change. The Midrash tells us that when Moshe was born, right, Yocheved saw such a beautiful child and said, right, V'tereh oto ki tov hu, right, she saw that he was good, right, Tanya Rabbi Meir Omer, Tov Shmo, right? When it says that he was good, the Midrash tells us, Rabbi Meir tells us in the Gemara in Masechet Sota, what does it mean that it was good, right? Ki Tov Hu, he was good. Rabbi Meir says, no, it's not that he was good, like a good boy. It's his name. His name was Tov. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tuvia or Tovia Shmo, right? The idea of Tov is not just a personality trait, it was actually his name, right? And then we know that Bat Paro changes his name or gives him a new name, which is Moshe. And the last name idea, I think this is a very known idea, is in the Mechilta, in source number seven. The Mechilta tells us that Yitro actually has seven names, right? What are his seven names? Yeter, Yitro, Chovav, Reuel, Putiel, Keni. And the Midrash explains what each name is for, and then goes through why each one is there. But it is interesting to think about the fact that all four characters, again, whether in Pshat or Midrash, get a name change. And I think it's interesting to think about the significance of a name change. I think the significance in the Tanakh is that there is a change in the destiny of the person, right? If one person was meant to do X, when they get a name change, they're now meant to do Y, right? The Midrash, the Gemara actually tells us, right, Mishane Makom, Mishane Mazal, but there's also an idea that, right, if you change your place, you change your luck. But there's also an idea that if you change your name, you also have a change in your, again, one can call it luck, one can call it destiny. I think many of us are familiar with this concept when, unfortunately, a person is ill, they tend to add a name, right? Chaim, Rifael, things that have to do with healing. And that really signifies this idea that when you add a name or change a name, it changes something about that person. And I think it's interesting that Naomi, Ruth, Yitro, and Moshe all get name changes. And again, I think the question is, What was the purpose? I think that definitely with Naomi, the name change in terms of her own changing of her name is actually her telling everyone she's no longer the same person. On one hand, in terms of, as she explains in the Pshat, I left with a whole family. I came back with no one, meaning except for Ruth, but no one she left with. On the other hand, I wonder if it's also an idea of the guilt or the shame that she might be feeling for having left all of her neighbors when she left to Moab with her family, right? And maybe this is her way of saying, I'm a different person. I'm a new person. Ruth as well. I think that here when the Midrash says that that Mahlon changed her name, it could signify some sort of, I don't know if the word is conversion, but she's now marrying a Jewish guy. Okay, now she's going to be known with a Jewish name. One could say that that could be the reason that when she converts later on in that first perek, we also see that she doesn't change her name there. So it could be that her name has already been changed as a reflection of the fact that she's already joined the Jewish people at first through marriage and then through I was going to say formal conversion, even though really it's not a formal conversion either. And then we have Moshe and Yitro. I think for sure with Moshe, we see two sides of his personality, of his character traits. Here it's the idea that he gets a name from both women, right, from his biological mother and from the woman who raised him. I think it also adds to his personality traits in terms of how he sees himself. Does he see himself an Egyptian? Does he see himself as a Jew? We know definitely in the beginning, he's not sure, right? So much so that when Yitro's daughters see him, when they go back to tell his father, their father, that they saw a man, they call him an Egyptian man, right? Meaning, it's not clear, right, what his identity is. Obviously, later on, it is very clear to Moshe who he is. But I think that it also defines who he is as a person. Whether or not, right, definitely afterwards he sees himself as a Jew and he goes to save his people, I think having that Mitzri side of him is an important and an integral part of who Moshe is as a person and as a leader. And finally, with Yitro, I think that we have a similar idea as well. The Torah seems to, I should say the Midrash, seems to call all of these people Yitro. And every time we encounter Yitro, he's there for a different purpose. And whenever he's doing something new, he gets a new name. So I think that this really proves the thesis that a new name connotes a new destiny, right? A new characteristic, a new purpose or goal in one's life. And therefore, I mean, I think he chose probably the extreme version of this, where he has a different name almost for everything that he does in the Torah. Okay, let's go to the third section. In the third section, we have the leaving. If you remember, both Ruth and Moshe are told to leave their in-laws, right? In source number 8, we have in Megillat Ruth, right? But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, turn back, each of you to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me, right? Meaning Naomi says, you've been amazing. You've taken care of me. You were, wonderful daughters-in-law, but now the time has come, right? And everybody needs to go back to Beit ima, to their mother's house, right? Naomi is telling the girls, I'm not your mother. You have a mother in, right, Moab, one could say maybe in the palace, but you have a mother, and Naomi says, I'm not your mother, right? She says, if you're waiting around for me to have another child, you know, stop waiting. It's not happening. So she says, go back to your mother. It works for Orpah, right? But it does not work for Ruth, right? Ruth says, I'm not going anywhere. Let's look at the parallel scene of Moshe, right? Moshe, is in the desert. He is tending the flock of Yitro, and he is called by a heavenly vision, right? He sees the burning bush, the sneh bo'er ba'esh. He sees the bush burning, and he has his encounter with God, right? And God tells him that he needs to go back to Egypt to save the Jewish people. And interestingly enough, Moshe, right, in the next scene, Moshe goes back to Yitro, and Moshe says to him that, to Yitro, let me go back to my kinsmen in Egypt and see how they're faring, right? Almost like he's asking permission from his father-in-law, right? One would think that he would not have to ask permission to leave, right? Yaakov does not ask Laban if he can leave. Actually, he runs away and then Laban runs after him. Here he asks permission. And I think that this really does show that strong relationship between the son-in-law and the father-in-law, right? That Moshe is almost asking permission to go, and Yitro tells him, again, what does he say to him? Lech leshalom, right? And this, the Gemara picks up on the idea of lech leshalom as opposed to lech bishalom, right? To go in peace or to go with peace. But here Yitro says to go in peace, to go towards peace. And he actually gives him this bracha and sends him on his journey. Right. So interestingly, Moshe leaves his father-in-law. Ruth does not leave her mother-in-law. Again, not in terms of right and wrong, just interesting in terms of how their lives are either converging or diverging. The last section here that I brought for you is the idea of conversion. I think that very clearly in source number 10, we have the famous psukim of Ruth's conversion, right? Where she says, Ruth says, do not urge me to leave you, meaning don't make me go back, to turn back and not follow you, right? And she says, for wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God is my God. Right? I think very powerful words. Interestingly, in the Midrash in Chazal, this is her conversion. Right? There's no 2-year course with the rabbi. There is no test. There is no Beit Din. Nobody is teaching her or taking, checking if she knows how to kosher a chicken. This is her conversion. She makes a declaration. One could say that maybe she's been living in Naomi's house for so many years that she already knew all the laws. One could say that in the time of Ruth, this is all you needed, because, it was not fun to be part of the Jewish people. So if you're going to risk your life to follow Naomi back to Israel, it must be that you're committed and serious. But this is her conversion. Obviously, very clearly, Ruth converts. Interestingly, as I mentioned before, We said that it's clear Moshe is Jewish. It is clear that he has a Jewish identity. But it is important to recognize that Moshe has an Egyptian identity, right? He grew up in the palace. He grew up among the Egyptians. He then spends, as the Midrash says, another 40 years with the Midianites, with the Midian, with Yitro. So it is interesting to maybe see source number 11 as, again, I don't mean to imply as a conversion, but I do want to say an encounter with God, right? If Ruth's conversion is a recognition of God, right, where she says, Elokayich Elokai, I think that Moshe has a parallel experience. And that, of course, is the scene at the burning bush, the Sne Bo'er Ba'esh. That is in source number 11. In source number 11, there is a Malach Hashem, right? There's an angel of God who appears to Moshe in a blazing fire out of a bush. He gazed, Moshe, right, looked, and there was a bush all aflame, yet the bush was not consumed, right? This idea that there's a sne bo'er ba'ish, it's burning, the hasne enenu uchal. It's not, it is not being consumed. It's not being burnt up. It's just, right, constantly burning and not falling apart, right? Moshe recognizes that this is divine, that this is miraculous. It's not a regular, forest fire or desert brush fire. There's something going on here. And Moshe says, right, I must turn aside to look at this marvelous sight. Why doesn't the bush burn up? Right, instead of walking away, instead of bringing a bucket of water, he says, something is going on here. And, I need to see what's going on. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to look, God called to him out of the bush, Moshe, Moshe, and he answered, here I am, right? Hineni. There is a revelation to Moshe. It happens when he's alone by himself in the Midbar, in the desert. And this is his moment and his first of obviously many encounters with God. So I think just to compare Ruth and Moshe, both of them having either a spiritual encounter in a very literal sense, if you take Nivuah literally, which I do. So again, in a literal sense, in a physical sense, or in a more inspirational sense, which is the Ruth and Naomi story, meaning Ruth is inspired by Naomi and says, wherever you go, I'll go. In that sense, it's, I want to be with you, Naomi. But on the other hand, Amech Ami, your nation shall be mine, the Elokaich Elokai, right? Your God will be my God. And finally, out of our four characters, the last character that needs to convert is Yitro. And as I mentioned in the beginning, it's not clear what happens at the end of the Yitro story. We see that, again, Moshe invites Yitro to stay, right? They came with their father Reuel. This is Yitro. Why is he called Reuel, says the Midrash in source number 12, right? What does Reuel mean? Because he joined with God, right? Basically, right, Rea, here Rea as in friend of God, right? That he joined himself with God. And I think that, again, the Midrash has Yitro converting. Again, I don't think that the Midrash meant, I'm not sure if it meant to tie all four of these characters together, but I do think it is interesting that out of our four characters, we would have everybody converting at the end. Interestingly, right, again, it's like the opposite people are converting, right? Naomi, the mother-in-law, Moshe, the son-in-law, are Jewish, and we have Yitro, the father-in-law, and Naomi and Ruth, the daughter-in-law, converting. So again, I think just fascinating in terms of our characters. Okay, and for our last theme is the theme of humility. Right, as we mentioned, Ruth, again, the Midrash says that she is a princess. In Perek Bet of Megillat Ruth, we have a very devastating scene of Naomi sending Ruth to go to the fields to collect the grains of wheat or barley that are falling behind the farmers, meaning behind the osfim, the people who are harvesting, right? They are the poorest of the poor, right? Ruth the Moabiah said to Naomi, I would like to go to the fields and glean among the ears of grain behind someone who may show me kindness. And Naomi says, yes, daughter, go, right? What is, if you can imagine, right, again, both, as I wrote here, both of them are brought up in a palace, right? If you can imagine Ruth, who sat while attendants bathed her and dressed her and fed her, right, and took her everywhere, she's now, right, the poorest of the poor, literally picking up grain after grain, right, little pieces of grain in the field, and doesn't mind doing it. Right? Meaning she goes besimcha to do this. And of course, we have Moshe here in the Pshat, and of course in Midrash, right? Moshe, we know again, was brought up in the palace. And now in the beginning of Shmot, we see Moshe tending the flock of his father-in-law Yitro, the priest of Midian, drove the flock into the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God, right? This is the beginning of the scene with this, the burning bush. But what is this great prince of Egypt doing? He is a shepherd, right? And the Midrash, of course, discusses the importance of Moshe being a shepherd, right? The idea that when you're sitting and you're watching the flock, and you care about every single sheep or lamb that you have to care for, like that really taught Moshe to be a thoughtful leader. Right? And I think, as I had mentioned in the beginning, both of these characters, both of these people needed to have the upbringing in a palace. They needed to know how monarchies ruled. What does it mean to live in a palace? And what does it give you? What characteristics, what strength of character does it give you? But the other side of that coin is extremely important, right? The other side of that coin is understanding that both Ruth, right, the mother of monarchy, and Moshe, the greatest leader of the Jewish people, needed to have humility, right? And that they learned from their lives, right? From the circumstances of their lives. Again, it's interesting if they learned humility from being, right, a shepherd or very poor, or they were able to be a shepherd and very poor because they had that innate ability of to be humble. Again, that goes back to last week's discussion of nature or nurture. But either way, if it was their nature, it was definitely nurtured in their lives. And I think that really showed, that really gave them the ability to become the leaders or the mother of leaders in terms of Ruth's descendants, which is Beit David, right? I think it's interesting also to think about the holidays that both of these people symbolize, right? Moshe, Yitziat Mitzrayim. We have the physical redemption of the Jewish people. Ruth, where we read on Shavuot, where we have Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, which is the spiritual redemption of the people. So again, we have almost a continuum that goes from Egypt, Yitziat Mitzrayim, right? The exodus from Egypt through the desert to the accepting of the Torah, right? For Ruth on a personal level, but also for the nation of Israel on a natural, on a national level. And I think really the idea that we have Moshe beginning the process of Geula, of the redemption, and Ruth, who gives us David, who will ultimately give us Moshiach, to give us our ultimate redemption. I would love to open it up now if anybody has questions or comments. I would love to hear your thoughts in terms of if you have other similarities that you could think about between these four characters, whether it's between the in-laws or the kids, or, you know, even the opposite way. But I would like to hear if you have any thoughts or comments. Any ideas?
When you talked about nature or nurture or Moshe's nature, he left the palace and went about and saw the men fighting and killed the Egyptian. So it would seem that he already had the trait of compassion, although perhaps his nobility made him have the gumption to kill the guy, because I don't think a regular person, poor person, but he had this upbringing in the palace, which made him feel powerful. And hence he might have had the feeling that he had the right to kill this guy, the same as when he went in the desert and he fought the men who were harassing Zipporah, and he fought them with his staff. So he did have already some sense of justice, which might have been instilled in him by his mother, but I guess we don't really know.
True. Excellent. I agree with you. It's interesting that he needed both sides, right? Like you said, compassion, but also strength of character to act on what you think or know is the right thing to do. It's important to understand how to balance those two ideas, but it is important to have both of them, right? If you only have compassion, but you don't have the strength, again, of character to carry out what you feel is the right thing to do, then you don't really, you might not follow through. So it is interesting that he needed both the Egyptian side and the, again, I don't know why I'm saying Egyptian versus the Jewish side, but I definitely agree that he needed both. I see here someone had mentioned, I think Naomi had mentioned the idea of mother's house, when Naomi sent Ruth and Orpah back to Beit Imah, as opposed to Beit Aviha, right, back to their father's house. It is very interesting. I think that she felt that I think that she felt that the daughters were clinging to her as a daughter clings to her mother. And therefore, I think that's why she sent them back to their mother, to kind of say, I'm not really your mother. Like, go back to your mother who's, you know, you have that relationship with. I think that's the idea. But you're right that generally, definitely in the Gemara, we always see Beit Avicha, that, or Beit Avich, right? The idea that that's the house that's going to support you, right? Your father's house is going to support you financially. Which is why I think that here Naomi is hinting to not necessarily financial support, though it could be, but maybe more emotional support. But I think beautiful that you caught those two, that difference. Any other comments or thoughts?
Moses's children are lost to history. whereas Ruth's children are forever in history, Beit David.
Wow. Okay, so what does that mean?
That's the opposite. That's the opposite there. Ruth through Naomi's house continues through the women's side because the sons die off. Moses' wife perpetuates his side because he would have died had she not intervened in that instance.
Beautiful. I love those comparisons. So interesting that the national leader's children are lost. We don't really hear. Whereas the quiet personal leader, her children are forever in history, as you said. So I think fascinating. Very opposite. So fascinating. Thank you.
Ruth gets to go into the land again, okay. And Naomi does. Moses only gets to see it from a distance.
Correct.
So she might be the continuation of his mission in the sense of King David, but they're not from the same tribe.
No, but we can call it, spiritual continuation. very true. Very true. Right. Moshe is never in Israel. Naomi leaves Israel and comes back. And Ruth, does enter. So beautiful. Yes, Naomi.
So I heard a really interesting idea from Nechama Price, who did a shiur on Tzipora. And she has a really bad deal. Basically, Moshe has the relationship with Yitro, and she barely gets named even. And there's no love story. There's nothing. You mentioned it, but I just want to expand on that. That when you look through the whole story, that he doesn't spend time with her. It's a very odd relationship, and the relationship between him and his father-in-law was obviously much stronger.
Agreed. I think that. When reading Pshat, we don't always think of it that way. I think the same thing, by the way, is with Ruth and Boaz, right? If you ask children, they'll say, oh, and then they lived happily ever after, right? Ruth finally marries her Prince Charming Boaz. But interestingly enough, I mean, the Midrash certainly picks up on this. But the Pshat, interestingly, is who lives happily ever after? Ruth, Naomi, and the child. And there is no mention of Boaz. I really don't, I'm saddened by the Midrash's statement of, oh, the reason he's not mentioned is because he dies the next day. Meaning, because it's not about Boaz. It's about, I mean, it is, but it isn't. And interesting, if that's the same case of Moshe and Tzipora, I'm not sure. Meaning, we definitely see, he marries Tzipora, they have two children, but we definitely see—I don't want to call it attention—but we definitely see, right? Miriam speaks Lashon Hara because she says, "Look, Moshe's never with Tzipora." Hashem says, because Moshe is with God. But it's interesting. I definitely agree. It's a very complicated. Very complicated.
And there's that bit right at the end of the Megillah where it's Naomi who's presenting the baby and feeding the baby. Yes. That's very weird. Yes. As well.
Exactly. So again, the Midrash says Boaz would have done it. He's just not there anymore. But I think it's really, it's a fulfillment of a relationship between Ruth and Naomi, meaning Naomi wanted, needed a continuation, and Ruth has provided that for her. So much so that Ruth gives her the child. I mean, again, I'm sure Ruth is involved in bringing him up, but it's really about what Ruth does for Naomi. And I think it's quite clear at the end of the story. And again, I think Moshe and Yitro as well. Yitro comes and you see an entire perek of the conversation between Moshe and Yitro. Again, I'm not implying that there wasn't a relationship between Moshe and his wife. I just don't know anything about it. We definitely see much more conversation between Yitro and Moshe. So I think it's something to think about.
I think Ruth actually sacrificed herself to her mother-in-law. Like, she totally negated herself, and she's disappeared from the picture. Like, Naomi takes over the child, and it's almost like Esther. You have two heroines, but they disappear, and they basically sacrifice themselves. And it's kind of a little sad for Ruth. She married this much older man, and she left her homeland. I guess in the end she's rewarded because she has David HaMelech, but really she's kind of been cut out of the picture as well, in my opinion.
It's interesting that you say that. I definitely agree that she humbles herself for Naomi. We see it throughout the Megillah. But I would challenge the forgotten, because we do call Ruth the mother of Melucha, meaning it is Naomi, but it's not, meaning we say Ruth, meaning Ruth is remembered as David HaMelech's great grandmother. So the way I see it is that through her humility, she rose to become who she was. And I don't think that she's negated completely. I think that it's part of her humility.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Yeah, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Excellent. Are there any other?
Yeah, yeah. King David is a shepherd and Moses is a shepherd, but that's the obvious. Right. Moses intervenes between God and the children of Israel and nourishes the children of Israel with Torah and with manna. And Ruth and Naomi come to the land of Israel and are nourished by the land with the gleaning. Mm. So it's the opposite. It's the, there's a symmetry there that the fulfillment of the Torah, where the poor don't get manna from heaven, but get gleanings from the corners of the field. It's the opposite of it, but it's the fulfillment of it.
Beautiful. I love that. That, I guess that would be a continuation of Ruth entering the land when Moshe couldn't.
Yes. Who nurtures and who gets nourished by.
Beautiful. I think beautiful, right? Moshe calls himself a nursing woman, right? Meaning, like a nursemaid. Right. Moshe is the nurturer. But interestingly, so is Ruth. Right. Ruth is the breadwinner, almost literally, for the household. But she is at the mercy, right, of Boaz and of Tzedakah, you know, in Beit Lechem. But I also love that idea of man coming down, whereas Ruth has to pick. Right, she has to glean the wheat. So yes, beautiful. I've learned so much from this shiur. Thank you so much. Thank you everyone for joining today. Wishing you all a Shabbat Shalom. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we will have our last shiur next week, where we are going to be talking about David HaMelech, and I look forward as a continuation of Ruth, and I look forward to learning with you all next week. Wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.